Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast and out that we've been doing for almost 4 years. This is episode 45, and this month we have a rare set of interesting JavaScript topics. And as always, I have here with me Artur Sosins from the warm Latvia to help me comment about those topics. Hello, Artur.
Hello. Hello, JavaScript developers. Hello, world.
I can see you have been very happy with this participation. I don't know if you had your regular vodka or whatever is the typical.
It's getting colder here every day. Nights are getting darker, so I'm clinging to every bit of happiness and optimism I have. So I'm happy.
Okay, yeah, that's good to know. So we are going to start talking about several interesting topics. Let me share the screen here. And okay, the first topic here, I think it is interesting because many people are using the jQuery libraries, not just the main jQuery, but other jQuery UI and mobile. This is the announcement of the jQuery Foundation. And they say that this is not just about jQuery libraries themselves, but other libraries that are interesting to make the web better, promote the open standards and everything else. They have here a jQuery Foundation mission and vision statement on this page. And I think it was interesting to mention just because several people, many people are using jQuery. I'm not sure if this is to promote specific projects, giving them more visibility, somewhat like the Apache Foundation. Artur, did you follow this announcement? What did you get from this?
I think basically it's maybe not so much about libraries and what jQuery did, but it's more about coming together and learning things and doing things right in a standard way. Because as we all know, there is a complete chaos and standardization even with the new HTML5 and CSS3. Mm-hmm. And basically, I think, yes, they're not just jQuery Foundation is a step towards to bringing it together and clearing out the misinformation and learning from each other. I think they also have lots of talk and conference and they are becoming more than just jQuery community.
Yeah, that's good to know. Maybe because jQuery just by itself sort of create a new sort of programmers. They are not JavaScript programmers. Yeah. They are jQuery programmers.
True.
And so whatever is done by the jQuery people, the people behind the jQuery libraries. Not just John Jurassic, but also other contributors. It's good to promote good practices, good standards that sort of minimize the effort to develop web applications. Because as you said, there are standard documents, but then there are differences in the implementations that make things more complicated. And now with this initiative of jQuery Foundation to promote the good practice to make the web development more friendly to developers in the sense that they do not need to learn the differences between certain browsers implementations, that seems to be a good thing. And now moving on to another topic. This is a somewhat unusual topic because it's about a browser that it's said to be entirely written in JavaScript. It's called the Bridge browser. And actually, I downloaded it, but I didn't try it. I downloaded it for Linux. That's what I use. I see a lot of JavaScript code, but also saw lots of binary libraries, I mean, precompiled libraries. So probably this is not really entirely written in JavaScript. It's not entirely accurate, but I think it is interesting. We already have headless browsers, basically browsers that do the function of accessing sites and retrieving the pages. It's just like regular browsers, but they would not show any user interface. But in this case, it's a browser with a user interface that is all in JavaScript.
And HTML and CSS.
Of course, of course. If it was not that, you probably could not render anything. And well, I don't know, what opportunities do you see with having a browser like this that is entirely in JavaScript, Arthur?
Yeah, well, firstly, as a developer, I can only say, come on, that's the one more browser to support in all those cross-browser mix-ups. From the other point of view, it's a browser that every developer can create for themselves the way they want it. So this probably mostly not for development, but for personal use with maximum customization from the skills that you already have. Like you want to edit something, you edit HTML file, and that should be as easy as, well, as web developer does do it. So that should not be a problem.
Yeah, I was hoping, well, I was thinking about other things, like for instance, if you want to capture images or from pages, you could always use a browser like this. It would not be exactly like using some common browser, because there may be eventual differences in the rendering engine, but it would be useful for a site or something else to capture those pictures. Probably have more controls over the pictures that are captured from pages, not just the visible area that could get the whole picture. But I think you can always do that with headless browsers like PhantomJS and others. And maybe you can also have some control over tests that we want to do on pages. Although you can always do that with Selenium and the existing browsers.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm missing something that could be interesting. But anyway, we are here just to talk about this. That is relatively a new thing, and people that probably see other applications can go immediately there and check it out. We'll post the link in the show notes, but the address of this new browser bridge is bridge.cc. So given that, let's move on to the next topic. Okay, let me share the screen here, which is about the Lipmos integration of the Lipmos controller with a library for game development called QEJS. Actually, I did not know this library. About the Leap Motion controller, I heard about it because it does something fantastic, which is to allow you to sort of control your computer with gestures. You do not need even to touch on the screen. It just captures the movements of whatever is close. And it's pretty cool. So we have finally arrived to the future. So this is not only a thing for science fiction movies like Minority Report. We now can manipulate the screen with your own hands. Maybe it's not always as interesting as it looked in the Minority Report movie, but for instance, for games, you can, as long as the games support the interactions with this controller, You can use sushi sticks to play Angry Birds.
Yeah.
Well, as I mentioned, the integration with games, it is interesting, and I think that's what this QEJS library is providing now.
No, I think that Leap Motion Controller had its own JavaScript SDK,
yeah.
and Kiwi simply uses it. Probably there is a plugin on some sort of, but I don't know who created it. It's pretty interesting that you can create game in browser with such controller. That you could create really awesome stuff here, I can imagine.
Well, this is interesting because nowadays people are using more and more mobile devices, not just phones, but also tablets, and this is for desktop computers, right?
Yeah.
Well, okay. Let's see what happens next. It really picks up. This seems interesting. I have not seen real people, I mean, other than the other people that shows here in the videos that are being advertised, to actually use this in real-world applications, but probably it's too early. In the future, there will be more and more applications that encourage more people to buy these devices. It would probably make more sense if these devices would actually come integrated in future computers, notebooks or things like that. Well, it's interesting anyway. Arthur, you sort of being close with the game development world. What do you think about the possibilities of these devices? Is it something that you see being used feasibly, or maybe you see certain difficulties there?
Well, as you said yourself, then more and more people are getting used to the touch input devices like phones or tablets, and now there is a micro console era like OEO, like Fire TV, where you again need to port your touch UI into the controller based UI, and it's a headache. And if those micro consoles would come with such devices with motion, that would make it easy to port your touch-based games into basically any computer or console or micro console that you want. So if that is would be needed in the future to do that, then this device would take off, and of course lots of people would use it. But well, who knows?
Well, maybe the I don't know how it could work, but maybe the future mobile phones and tablets can somehow integrate technology like this. I don't know if I think there are some Samsung phones that you can somehow control them without actually touching the screens. But anyway, the reason people are touching the screens is because they are closer to the what they want to manipulate. Probably it's not a big deal. So well, let's wait and see, because this is still very new, and we are probably not seeing all the applications this could have. And same goes for other devices like Oculus Rift, which is something very promising that even Facebook has acquired the company for a lot of money, and we don't know yet what are the plans for that. And it's also another interesting way to interact with the screens. You carry the screen in your head, and you can do many things, actually fulfilling the promise of virtual reality applications that started 20 years ago when the web started becoming more popular. Okay, let's wait and see what happens in that field. Now moving on to the next topic, which is related with a certain, I'm not sure if this is an initiative or this is a pledge. Somebody's asking for a sort of headless Drupal. Drupal is a popular content management system that is written in PHP, so it's basically a server-side application. And this manifesto as I said, I'm not sure if this is something that is already going on or it is just a pledge to Drupal developers to make it more somehow friendly to browser-side JavaScript libraries to be able to fetch the content in a way that they can manipulate it somehow. That's what I got from this initiative. Arthur, did you look into this? What did you get from this?
Yeah, it seems they are only thinking, discussing it, drafting a manifesto about what changes should be made to Drupal core. But yeah, basically, as you said, the idea is that the core would be completely separated from the rendering and provide a REST API to display JSON representations of the pages. So basically, there will be complete separation between the presentation and the core, and all the loading would probably be through AJAX calls. And I don't know exactly what they want to accomplish with it, but the idea seems interesting. Of course, it also provides lots of problems like search engine optimizations. As we all know, with AJAX, it's a pain usually.
That's an issue, né? Because what do they want to do with the content that they want to provide? They want to obtain from Drupal installations. Is it to display as regular web pages, or is it more to help editing the content somehow? Because content management systems are exactly for that purpose of publishing content, and often content needs to be exposed to the search engine, so you can actually the sites can get visibility and get more visitors that are looking for the content, searching it on Google, for instance. And if the content is displayed in JavaScript, it's problematic, although, for instance, Google says that the index, the content, when it is served via JavaScript or updated via AJAX requests, in practice, it doesn't work very well. Actually, it is interesting because just a couple months ago, the content of package pages on JS classes and PHP classes site the layout was updated. It changed to something more usable, well, for users, make the content be presented in tabs, and since the moment that update was implemented, Google probably is not indexing very well that content because they only consider the tab that is visible, even though there is a path to click on links to switch to other tabs. It's like, just like the other tabs do not exist, so this affected the rankings of the pages, and very quickly I reverted that change, at least for pages that are very well ranked in search engines. But it was a bit late because it still lost good traffic, and it did not recover, or at least did not recover a great part of what was lost. So if people start with the ideas of publishing, retrieving content via JavaScript, AJAX requests, and displaying it on dynamically or some other means that is not very well supported by search engines like Google, you probably will have an hard time having the content very well indexed by Google. So I'm not sure what is the idea here, because I can see they are considering using templates defined with JavaScript to render them the content, and
it is actually interesting concept, but for example, there will be one server that with a content management system, somebody will manage the content, and then it would be displayed through REST API. It means then that anybody can create a separate website, only client side, that would take information from there and display.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe if you have a mobile app, then you could load the content dynamically for that and display.
Yes.
Maybe that is the idea, that you could have many different environments that could want to get the information or something like that.
Yeah, that could be one purpose, like make it easier to render in different devices that probably cannot show the whole information that fits on a desktop or notebook screen because it's smaller. And the idea of having an API makes sense, but from the purpose of having the content index and be visible on search engines, I'm not sure if that is a good idea. On the other hand, it could be just an alternative way to retrieve the content, not necessarily the content that will be displayed for regular desktop users, which is what Google will index. And maybe it could be also to provide a better solution than what people call responsive designs. In general, responsive design is basically the same page is served, but part of the content is invisible. And that means that for mobile devices that have smaller screens, they still retrieve the same amount of HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, but only show part of the content. And in that case, it may be a bit of a waste of bandwidth, because if part of the content is not going to be made visible, why transfer it anyway?
Another interesting way to apply it could be the only backend testing. Like, you don't care about how it's displayed, you just want to test if the information passed, if it's saved correctly and stuff like that.
Yeah, that could be it. But I think for that, I think they already have, I suppose, I'm not a user of Drupal, I suppose they have already good testing for testing frameworks to evaluate that on just with the PHP code that Drupal installations have. Well, anyway, let's wait and see. Maybe this is about something different that we are not understanding very well. So let's move on. So another topic that I wanted to comment this month, it's about an interesting approach, a different approach for eventually capturing bugs that you may have caused by eventually you forgot to declare some local variable and it became global. So there's this article here, ensuring you are not heading to global scope in JavaScript. And the approach consists in counting global variables, as in if you count global variables before and after you load certain code, you can detect there is some difference, and if the number of expected global variables that you add is not what it should be, you can probably detect there is some declaration there that is not correct. And this is an interesting alternative. Arthur, did you look into this?
Yeah, basically it uses the trick that all the global variables are stored as properties of window. So it checks amount of properties window had before executing the function and after that. So this approach could be easily used for unit tests to check if the function added anything to a global scope. So, and as the author says further, that you can achieve the same effect by using strict, because I think it usually raises an error if you're not using var to declare the variable.
That's interesting. I usually do not use strict because I'm sort of afraid of more errors starting popping up, and then they are not really errors. But yeah. Now that you mentioned, maybe I should try to see what happens. Usually I use tools like JS Hint and JS Lint to warn me about inadvertent declarations of global variables that should be local. And it is useful because once in a while you forget to declare those. We are so used to languages that do not require us to declare variables that you forget that in JavaScript you need to declare them to make them local, and that's a burden that is not you have to put up with to avoid confusing variables that should be local with globals. So okay, this is an interesting approach for this problem that you may also want to check out. The purpose is basically the same of that you could achieve with JS Hint and JS Lint, but okay, it's a different way to get to the same place. So now moving on to another topic, also somewhat unusual, which is about something that is called magic numbers. Well, I never heard of this being, with, at least with this name. But what they call magic numbers are basically constants that are used throughout your code, and could be constants that in reality could be configuration values, but they are somehow encoded in your code. So with this library called buddy.js, it analyzes your code and finds the lines where you are using those constants, in this case numbers, and you can use them to move those values to variables that will act as constants. I don't think there are constants in JavaScript, right? Or at least before ECMAScript 6, because I don't know, ECMAScript 6 is turning JavaScript into a language like the other languages with real classes and probably things like this. That's why I didn't check if ECMAScript 6 also has constants.
They say that const is available in Node.
Oh, okay. So if you are using Node, you are fine. But if you are not using Node, you could use variable declarations and make your code. Well, it will not run faster because it actually turns a constant into a variable, so it still has to look up for the variable, but at least you can make your code more readable because you use meaningful names instead of constant numbers.
So especially if you reuse the value, it is also much more manageable to have it all declared in one place.
Yeah, that's true. If you use the same value several times throughout your code, it will be a greater gain because your code will eventually become more readable in different places. So this is
the interesting thing about it is actually that the buddy.js somehow knows when you're using the value somewhere or where you're declaring it as a variable, because as you see from examples, in the first example it found two magic numbers, in the second example where you assign the value to variable, it found no magic numbers. So basically it not only simply detecting raw values, but it also knows where when you're using them or when you're like assigning
declaring
them.
That's a clever step. Well, if they're creating a whole program to do this, they better do a better job than grep the grep command.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you look at it, what they do is basically very similar to what grep does, which is to show the lines that use that code. I mean, the numbers in the code. Okay, and well, with this we move on to one of our regular sections on which we comment about the latest innovation award winners. In this case, we are going to comment about the winners of May. They were voted in June, so in July the results come out. So we are already in August, so you can comment about them without influencing the results. So, Artos, which one would you like to comment this month?
Let me try to share a screen. I don't know if Google Hangout will allow me to. I hope it does. This one. And share. Okay. Does it? Yeah, it shows now. So first one I wanted to comment is a package by Stephen Chapman from Australia. And Stephen Chapman from Australia. And it's called Dollar Bee. The name is because, well, he actually declares his variable as Dollar Bee, you know, like the dollar sign and B. And what it does, it basically stores the values about the window properties, like dimensions of the window, and provides some methods and to accessing mouse positions, and does it all in a cross-platform way and detecting the changes. So yeah, basically, as we talked before about the cross-platform problem and jQuery solves it, and basically the dollar B solves the some specific portion of it. And as you can see in this example, here is an example code that you can load different CSS files based on different window resolutions that you might have, all by checking the dollar B values. So that would be the first one I wanted to mention. And
yeah, that's useful to write a portable code and not need a jQuery.
Browser, yeah. Exactly. Oh yeah, thank you to Stephen Chapman. Now the next one I wanted to show is by Mark Rowich from Armenia. And he provided an interesting way. Let me try to show you. He provided an interesting way to display select boxes. Basically, what he does, he transfers this select box to a table, and also selectable table. Oh, it's loading. Yeah, so here we see it. So here is an example simple drop-down select, and we can also select it with this table. Here are the multiple values. You can hit Control and select multiple values, or you can hit Shift, and it will behave as a normal drop-down box. It just provides a different UI for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so and that's quite interesting. That could be usable like for something like a calendar, that you can easily transform a select box to a calendar. Or
it's probably more useful in touch devices, right? Because you can drag your finger
from
the hair, and
you can also drag it, and it will automatically select all the choices. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Try to do your finger if you see. You don't have a touch device.
No, unfortunately not. Okay, so yeah, that is an interesting use of the select drop-down box by Mark Rowich. Thank him for that. And the last one I wanted to mention is a package by Android Jordan Marmolejo, right? No?
I'm not sure.
How do you not sure? Aren't you just
because you know, in Portugal and Brazil we talk Portuguese, and the spelling is not exactly the same thing.
Yeah, really? I thought they're pretty different.
Yeah, that sound makes that confusion. Yeah.
Okay.
We can understand Spanish, and actually I think Andoids is from Barcelona, which they do not, they also speak a different idiom, which is Catalan. It's not exactly Spanish. It's similar. It's similar also to Portuguese, but it's not the same. But I'll not risk to tell you for sure what is the correct spelling of his name. But, okay, I think you got it more or less right.
Okay. So what this package does, it implements an A-star algorithm, which is basically a pathfinding algorithm. It could take a matrix of values where you can walk and where you cannot walk, and you see it draws a table and it can find a way to it. We can refresh it, it generates the random, the example generates randoms. So we can always see, yeah, it finds the shortest way for it, and A-star is pretty efficient even for, can be used in JavaScript as you see. So yeah,
it's interesting.
Thanks for this package to Android.
Okay.
That would be about.
Oh, okay. So this is great because this month we had lots of nominees. Fortunately, the audience of JS Pass is growing, and we did is also growing the number of interesting contributions. And on my behalf, I'm going to comment another three packages, just so we can comment all of them. This month we had time to comment. So the first one that I'm going to comment.
Now it's your turn to tell his name.
Yeah. No. No, the name is the same. Well, again, Android has submitted yet another interesting package. It's good to know. And as we're going to comment ahead, it's helping Spain to move ahead in the ranking of the Innovation Award by country. But we'll get back to that ahead. So for now, let me just comment on this package, which is called JavaScript Query Terminal, and which is basically an online console on which you can run some server commands using AJAX. Let me show you some screenshot. It's a bit small, but I think you can see it basically looks like a shell that you can find on many systems, but have shells like Linux or even Windows. It's somewhat similar, but it looks more like a typical Linux shell. And you can run some commands and on the server side. There must be some code that actually executes the commands and returns the responses. So this is an interesting console library that does the browser side part of the console system. So thank you, and it's also for yet another great contribution. And the next package I'm going to mention, this one is from Thomas Björk, which is from Sweden and has been submitting several interesting contributions, not just this month, but in the other months. But in this case, this is a JavaScript tree linked list, which is a data structure to that is helpful to store hierarchies of values that are arranged in a binary tree. So it provides all sorts of functions to traverse the tree of elements. So congratulations to Thomas for his contribution. And another package that I'm going to mention, this one is from Valo Reima from Estonia. And this one is called JS Merge XML. This is a bit somewhat unusual because most XML-related applications are more to read to parse or to generate XML, but in this case, it allows to combine those functionalities and merge XML documents and even search them with XPath expressions. So this is interesting, an interesting, more advanced package to manipulate XML documents. So congratulations to Valo for his contribution. Now, given that we mentioned all the nominated packages, now let's see where are the standings of the Innovation Award rankings by country. So as I mentioned before, Andwitz has been submitting great packages, and just considering the ranking so far, Andwitz is leading with the package in 10 points, followed by Jimmy Bow from Canada with 3 packages and 7 points, and then several other authors with just 1 package. Next, we also look at the Innovation Award ranking by country, and thanks to Andwitz, Spain is leading currently with just the same 2 packages that Andwitz is sending. So the Innovation Award championship for the JS Class site is still warming up. There is plenty of way to go, especially considering that in the latest months there have been many more contributions and many more countries are participating. So for now, Spain is leading, followed after by Italy with 3 packages and 8 points, then Canada with 3 packages and 7 points, followed by several other countries with 1 or 2 packages and less points. But well, let's wait and see how this goes in the upcoming months.
Yeah, basically, as Android showed, it's not too late to participate. You can jump in and move your country to the first place in a single month. So nothing is set in stones, and it's all going on. And if you want to secure your country's position, you should start participating now.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that one country that I'm not seeing here is Latvia. I don't know what happened in Latvia. Maybe people are enjoying the summer and not participating much. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, well, you see, it would be as with Android. 1 month and you're in the first place and so.
Yeah, right. Well, at least in the past, you know, Latvia used to be better ranked. There was a guy here with in the all-time award winners. There was a guy here that is in fourth, and even Latvia was well ranked in at least in the top 10 with many packages. And, well, this ranking only started last year, so it does not take in account the previous years, because there was no Innovation Award before. But anyway, as I was mentioning, the championship for JavaScript award, either individually and by country, is still warming up, and I hope it will start getting better. And evaluating from the number of packages that have been submitted lately, things seem they can change a lot, so let's wait and see how this goes for the upcoming months. Well, with this, we practically reached the end of this episode. It was a shorter one. There were not many topics to comment about as in the previous months. I don't know if it is because of the summer in the northern hemisphere. Yeah, everybody's on the beach. There is no time to program in JavaScript. There are not many news in the JavaScript world. So let's wait and see for the coming months if things get better. So on my behalf, that is all for now. I don't know if you have any final remarks, Arthur.
Yeah, enjoy rest of summer, last months of summer if you can. I already basically lost my option to enjoy it, but still.
Yeah, well, at least for me there's no summer here, because as you may see, I'm not wearing a coat, because it started getting colder. Well, it's normal, but this year in Brazil, thanks to global warming, there is no warm over here. It has been relatively cold. Just to say that probably global warming is not the right name to call this event in the weather, but that would be probably a topic for a totally different kind of hangout. We should be talking mostly about JavaScript. And for now, that's all. Let's wait and see for what the next month brings us interesting to the JavaScript world. So on my behalf, that's all for now. Bye.
Bye.